Hi, Rob B here with Rob D, and you are listening to the Property Podcast. This week, we are going through the essays that Ray Dalio has put out on the internet to give you an understanding of how the world economy works, and more importantly, helps you understand potentially what's going to happen next.
Welcome to the Property Podcast, where every Thursday, property investors come to be informed and inspired. Rob and I have spent many, many hours in the company of Ray Dalio's work. It has the potential to give you a far deeper understanding of what's going on in the world, but it's not particularly accessible to those who've only got a passing interest in economics. Well, in this episode, we're going to put that straight.
So normally, this point of the show, we cover the news story. But normally, this time of the month, we have our market update. We've put that back to next week because we really wanted to talk about Ray Dalio this week. But to give you a bit of a teaser of what's coming up, we'll be talking about the potential of negative interest rates and why up to 6% of homes in England could be unmortgageable right now. So there's loads for us to cover next week, so make sure you join us for that episode. And if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to the magazine. The magazine goes out every 2 months, and if you subscribe, you'll get our next issue, which is all about the lessons learned from 2020, from ourselves and from many people wiser than us. It's a brilliant issue. So if you're not a subscriber yet, get involved. It's only £5 for each copy delivered, which is incredible value. And if you are a subscriber already, lucky you. The next one out is brilliant. And Rob, if that wasn't enough, we've got a lovely YouTube video out as well, because we had a very popular podcast a couple of weeks back, so we popped it on the YouTube.
Yep, that interview with Robert Kiyosaki that we did a couple of weeks back, that has found its way onto YouTube with some lovely graphics. So if you missed that, or if you want to revisit it in video form, then go and search Property Hub UK on YouTube. And the follow-up to that we did last week was very popular as well. Loads of chatter about that on the socials and in the Property Hub forum. So thank you to everyone who's sharing their opinions on that one. Ray Dalio is someone worth paying attention to. He is a billionaire who runs Bridgewater Associates, one of the most successful hedge funds of recent decades. And as well as knowing what he's talking about when it comes to investment, he also shares his knowledge on a scale that not many others do. So his book, Principles, was a big favourite with us. He's also produced YouTube videos and a huge volume of articles that he distributes for free via LinkedIn. The common theme to Ray's work is understanding the big picture, understanding why things happen and how things have happened before and how different patterns have played out. So it's not uncommon for Ray to start an article talking about what's going to happen to the economy next year by talking about Chinese history 2000 years ago, because he's really taking this macro view. It's incredible stuff, but it takes some commitment to read. It's very, very long, and I wouldn't say it was beginner-level economics. Although he explains it very well, you need to have a grasp of the basics to really take in what he's talking about. But it's very much worth paying attention to, and we want to open it up to as wide an audience as possible. So in this episode, we're going to summarise what Ray Dalio has to say about the future of the world economy. Big topic. There's a lot to take in, but we've simplified it as much as we can. And then importantly, at the end, we're going to talk about what it actually means for the likes of you and me, the likes of small private investors, especially as it relates to property. Because if you've got an interest in economics, it's fascinating stuff. But what we really care about is, what should we all be doing?
So in this podcast, we're going to take thousands and thousands of Ray's words from his articles and turn it into a relatively short podcast that gets the main points across. Ambitious, but let's see if we can do it. So first of all, we need to talk about debt cycles. Ray has done a great job of talking about debt cycles through his video, How the Economic Machine Works. We'll link to it in the show notes, but it's a video we've recommended a few times in the past because it's brilliant. But let's describe those debt cycles. So first of all, the short-term debt cycle. This is a business cycle, and it repeats on average every 8 years. Sometimes a bit shorter and sometimes a little bit longer, but it does repeat. These cycles are driven by debt. The debt creates expansion. Expansion creates optimism, but then we become over-optimistic. And then once we've gone too far, this turns into contraction and often a recession. And that's why roughly every 8 years you see a stock market correction. And for most people, this is pretty easy to understand and absorb because it happens over a relatively short space of time. But the bigger deal is the long-term debt cycle.
The long-term debt cycle is in many ways more important, but it's also far more poorly understood. The reason for that is it lasts roughly 75 years. And so because of the length of it, most people only see one complete cycle in their lifetimes. So when the end of it comes along, and spoiler, the end is pretty messy, people are surprised when it happens because they haven't seen it happen before. So how does the long-term debt cycle play out? We'll talk through all the stages and then we'll make it a bit more real by talking about how those stages are playing out in the current debt cycle. So at the start of the long-term debt cycle, you've got what's known as hard money. This is money that is backed by something physical, such as gold. What that means is currency is just a representation of a fixed amount of gold that's kept in a vault somewhere. So if the government wants to increase the money supply, the only way it can do that is to actually physically obtain more gold. There's a firm link between the hard asset, the gold, and the currency. There might also be some debt in the economy, but those levels of debt are low.
Then, at some point, they want to increase the money supply. Governments will get frustrated by the restrictions and they'll want to stimulate their economy. But they can't because they can't print money. So, what do? Well, they give up on hard money and they turn to a fiat system, which basically means that you can create money out of nothing. Now, sometimes the world will ease into this system. So they turn to a fiat system, which basically means that you can create money. Money is no longer backed by anything, so it's backed by nothing. And if you want more money, well, you can decide to create more money. So governments, or central banks of those governments, can print as much money as they like. So they do.
So the government is happily printing money and also issuing debt. That means they get other countries or other individuals to lend them money, which is good for the government because it means they can spend more without having to increase taxes. Eventually, these debts get to a level where they can't realistically be paid back. So what they do at that point is print even more money and use that money to buy back their own debt.
So one of the consequences of this is it holds interest rates down and encourages borrowing, which then boosts asset prices, such as property. But this is ineffective in stimulating the real economy. To do that, they need to print and distribute more money. And guess what? They do.
Eventually, all this money printing creates inflation. Inflation is a rise in the general prices of goods, or another way of putting it is a fall in the value of the currency. There's more money floating around, so each unit of that currency is worth less when you compare it to goods or services that you might want to buy. When you get inflation, people don't want to hold that currency anymore, and they also don't want to hold any debt denominated in that currency. Why? Because for all the time that they're holding that currency, inflation means that it's becoming worth less in terms of what you can actually do with it. Inflation makes a currency very unappealing to hold. So instead, people get out of this currency and hold their money in the currency of another country or in hard assets like gold, which, as we've seen, are not inflationary.
So all this debt that's been accumulated needs to be restructured or forgiven or let go so everyone can start afresh. Sounds very nice, doesn't it? But it's messy, and history shows us it's messy. And we'll cover off what messy could be later on in this show. But it's important to know that these cycles go back hundreds, if not thousands of years, and they're even mentioned in the Bible. Ray Dalio has done an incredible job of evidencing this. So it's not him just saying it happens. He's evidenced it happening time and time again. And why does this keep happening? Well, one of the reasons is no single government is in charge for a whole cycle. And often governments are in just for a short period of time. So they're not incentivized to do anything about this, even if they understand it. Which, you may argue, not all governments do. So they're all the stages. But now let's map them on to what's actually played out in real life, to make it a bit more real for you.
Let's use the case of the US dollar, because the US dollar is the most important currency in the world at the moment, and it's also a cycle that appears to have got almost all the way through to the end. So the story of the US dollar and the long-term debt cycle this time round starts in 1944. In 1944, there's a conference at Bretton Woods, a very famous event, where various powers got together at the end of the Second World War to decide on a path forward. And at that conference, they decided that the US dollar would become the world's reserve currency. And at that point, the US dollar was fully backed by gold reserves, exactly like we talked about when we were going through the stages. Each dollar represented a fixed amount of gold that the government actually had in their vaults.
Then, by 1971, they were fed up with this system, and the link to gold was broken. So they created the fiat system, which allowed governments around the world who were in charge of reserve currencies to print as much money as they wanted. Now, it's worth saying that in 1971, it didn't just immediately stop. It was being wound up for many years before that. But the final link to gold was broken by President Nixon in 71. And that was the end of what many people refer to as the gold standard.
So as we've already seen, when this link is broken, that means that the government can then print as much money, issue as much debt as they want to. And they did. If you go look at a chart of US government debt levels over the last, say, 100 years, it's astonishing. Before the 1970s, you can hardly see any. The chart looks like there's nothing there. Then between the 1970s and today, it absolutely explodes. That could only happen because they'd come off the gold standard and that link with gold was broken. Then once that had happened, every successive government allowed that debt pile to get bigger and bigger.
Eventually, as a result of this borrowing, inflation and interest rates went close to zero in 2008. Now, the reason they cut interest rates is to stimulate demand, because low interest rates creates cheap debt. And debt, as we've talked about, can stimulate the economy. And this will include consumer debt. Also in 2008, they were forced to print money, often referred to as QE, quantitative easing, and with that money, buy financial assets to keep going. But this has a consequence.
Yes, the government buying up financial assets was great for asset prices. Anyone who already owned assets saw the value of those go up and up. But then that brings us to this year, when coronavirus hit, a huge shock to the economy, both on the demand side and the supply side. And understandably, that caused a downturn in the economy. At that point, what could the government do? Well, they couldn't reduce interest rates by much because they were already so low. They could keep on printing money to buy assets, which they'd already been doing, but they did even more of that. But none of that helped the real economy. It helped people who owned assets, but it didn't help normal people who'd been affected by the pandemic. So they then had to print even more money and give it directly to people who need it. You sometimes see this called helicopter money, because it's like someone's going up in a helicopter and just dropping money down on everyone. So in the UK, we've seen this in the form of various policies like the furlough scheme and Eat Out to Help Out. In the US, this went even further, and the US government literally sent a check to almost every taxpayer. In total, it added up to $2 trillion printed by the government and then sent directly out to individuals.
So that's where we are today. So what next? Well, if you follow the template we gave you before, next will be a continuation of asset prices going up, but also severe inflation because of all this money that's been created. And then people eventually deciding that they don't trust the US dollar or dollar-denominated debt anymore because it's simply just not worth anything anymore. And then that could be part of America's global dominance ending. So up to modern day, so far, we've followed the 75-year debt cycle almost to the letter. So what's next? Well, it sounds pretty dramatic, but potentially a new world order.
Yeah, what Ray says is that when you get to the end of a long-term debt cycle, there's such a big shakeout. It ends with the world looking fundamentally different. The currency that the world uses, the way economies are organized, the countries that have dominance, that all changes at the end of a cycle. We talked about the current cycle starting in 1944 when the US dollar became the world's reserve currency. And that was the start of a period of major US ascendancy and domination over the world. Prior to that, it was the UK. The UK was the major world power. Going back even further in time, it was the Dutch. The country that has the most world power changes over time. We're very used to it being the US, but because it has been in our lifetimes. But it's not always been that way, and it won't always be that way in future. So here's a quote from Ray Dalio describing how global power changes over time. And this is all linked into the cycle that we've talked about. He says, "Broadly speaking, we can look at these rises and declines as happening in three phases. First, the ascent phase, which is characterized by the gaining of competitive advantages. Second, the top phase, which is characterized by sustaining the strength, but eventually sowing the seeds for the loss of those competitive advantages that were behind the ascent. And thirdly, the decline phase, which is characterized by self-reinforcing declines in all these strengths."
So why does this decline happen? Well, people get lazy or maybe complacent. The country that became the world superpower got there for a reason. It wasn't just by chance or luck. But people get comfy. They get relaxed about their current situation. Productivity levels fall. Other countries look on envious of what the world superpower has and work hard to achieve that status. Wages increase, so it's often more expensive for that country to make stuff. And a large wealth gap will open, and people can begin to turn on each other. And when that happens, you will see populist governments come into power, something that we can relate to today.
Now, the country that is currently the world superpower usually has the world's reserve currency as well, meaning the one that the rest of the world tends to use for international trade between themselves. And as we've said, at the moment, that's the US dollar. When a country has their currency being used as the world's reserve currency, it makes it very easy to borrow from the rest of the world because people want that currency. They need it for trade. And when it becomes very easy to borrow from the rest of the world, the government tends to do that, a lot of it. And there's a tendency for that borrowing to fuel overconsumption and overexpansion. So being in the position of having the reserve currency makes the country stronger in the short term, it's a real advantage, but actually weaker in the long term because it creates this overconsumption and overexpansion.
So the US dollar could lose its status as the reserve currency if it has runaway inflation or a painful debt restructuring. Losing the reserve currency status normally follows decline rather than causing it, but it's all part of the loss of dominance by that world superpower. And we're seeing it play out now. The US is declining, and new powers, and mainly China, are rising with the ambition to take its place.
So you don't need to have been paying particularly close attention to global affairs over the last decade or so to be aware that these things are happening. We can see all the signs of this playing out and a period of US dominance coming to an end. But an important question is, how far through the cycle are we? How close are we to the end where the transfer of power takes place? Well, Dalio says, the stats seem to suggest that the US is roughly 75% through that cycle, plus or minus 10%. So the cycle isn't over, the messy end and the transfer of world power that results from that isn't inevitable, but he does say that when you go back and look at history, and he's looked at many examples of this from the past, that once you're this far through, it is very difficult to turn things around.
So the bit you've all been waiting for, what does all this mean for us? This may be intellectually very interesting, but what can we do about it? Well, there could be a huge messy meltdown tomorrow, or it could take another 10 plus years. Ray Dalio doesn't seem to believe we're at the end just yet. And it's almost embarrassing to follow on what we think after what Ray Dalio thinks, but we don't think it's about to happen either. We've talked about this in a podcast a few months ago when we were at the height of the coronavirus crisis. And we believe that this sits quite nicely and possibly conveniently on the 18-year property cycle, because you would expect a minimum of another 5 years. Now, during those 5 years, you will see huge growth in asset prices, bigger than probably any other 18-year property cycle. But the consequence would be a far bigger crash on the other side. Now, if you did think it was going to happen tomorrow, you can put all your money into gold right now. But remember, cash is no protection if we get inflation. So the worst thing you can do right now is just keeping your money in the bank. You need to get it into something, whether it's property, gold, or something else. But holding cash is probably the worst thing you could do right now.
But here's the thing, that's what you'd do if you thought this was going to happen tomorrow. You'd go and stick everything in gold and you'd expect it to hold its value or probably even increase in value as the world melts down around you. So that's what you could do if you wanted to be super safe. But the trouble is, if it doesn't happen tomorrow, if it takes another 5 years or 10 years for this to happen, you'll end up losing out massively as a result of having done that. Not only will you miss out on all the growth that you'd expect under normal times in other assets other than gold, but if you buy into everything that we've been saying about the property cycle and the debt cycle, then you'd expect growth to be even stronger over that period and you'd miss the whole thing. There were plenty of people who thought that 2008 was the end of days. When we had the crash then, they thought, well, this is the big one. You've seen what's happened with debt levels since the 1970s. This is the point at which it all crashes down and we have to rebuild everything from the ground up. As it turned out, that wasn't the case. And as a result, anyone who's been sitting out since 2008 has missed out on more than a decade of growth.
Now, we're in the minority right now because everything out there is a bit wild and wacky. But we also don't think, as we said, that the time is now either. Now, we could be biased, but if everything blows up, holding debt is good because we're going to get inflation and inflation devalues debt. So holding debt through that part of the cycle is actually a really good thing and you benefit just like the government does. And holding real assets with actual utility, like housing, seems a better play than holding government debt or equities. But of course, this is called the Property Podcast, so you would expect us to say that, but we do believe it. So there we have it. We've done our very best to cover tens of thousands of Ray Dalio's words into one podcast. this is probably one of those episodes that you want to go back and listen to again. Because if you really do absorb this and understand it, it will give you so much more confidence as an investor moving forward. And that's why, Rob, this week's Hub Extra has to be all these articles that we've been through from Ray Dalio.
Yeah, if our summary has got you interested rather than putting you off, then you can dive straight into the source material. We're going to link in the show notes to all of Ray Dalio's writings on LinkedIn, where he's been covering what we've just been talking about. And we'll link to his video, How the Economic Machine Works, which is about the short-term debt cycle as well, which is very much worth a watch. We're going to put all those links in a post on the Property Hub forum, and you'll find a link to that forum post in the show notes. So head over there, check out those links, and while you're there, let us know what you think about this whole topic. I'm sure we'll end up talking about it a little bit in a market update next week. But like Rob said, it's really important to understand all this stuff. Not so you can just buy into it blindly. Ray Dalio might be a billionaire, but he's not been right about everything. It's also far easier to go back in time and describe what's happened than it is to predict what's going to happen in the future. So you might not buy into all of it. You might not buy into our interpretation of it. And that's fine. You shouldn't just accept any of that. But as an investor, having an understanding of economics, understanding what the arguments are and the reasoning is, and using that to form your own views is so, so important. And hopefully in this episode, by simplifying Ray's work a little bit, we've given you some help in doing that.
So a longer episode than normal from us, but hopefully you feel it was worth it. We've certainly enjoyed going through his work. This has been a joy for us. Ray Dalio is a bit of a genius, and the work that he shares is absolutely fantastic. And I hope you've enjoyed our version of it. If you have, then go over to the Property Hub forum, like Rob said, and let us know what you think. Or you can join in the conversation via our social channels. Again, search for Property Hub UK. We'll be back on Tuesday with Ask Rob and Rob, and back next Thursday with the very popular market update. So until then, everyone, take care, have fun, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.